Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to the inaugural edition of Hometown Heroes, where we honor the men and women who have kept our country free, the men and women who are out there right now, and particularly the men and women of what's been called the greatest generation. If you've been following anything on television lately, you know that The War has been a critically acclaimed success for Ken Burns on PBS. For the last 3 years or so, I've been doing a weekly series on World War II veterans on CBS 47 called Stories of Service. And now I'm just absolutely thrilled to begin this radio program here on KMJ. We plan to be with you every Sunday from 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock. What we'll be doing is talking to World War II veterans and perhaps some weeks veterans of other conflicts as well. The idea is to preserve their history before it's too late. So many men and women who served during World War II never really talked about what they did, didn't tell their families, didn't tell their friends. They just went back to life. They were thankful to have a life and to have a country to come home to. And they never wanted to brag about any of the things that they did. This show isn't about bragging either. It's about paying tribute to what they accomplished and the significance of what they did 60 years ago. And also, in doing so, to inspire, to educate future generations, hopefully by involving them in the preservation of this history. Each week, we'll have World War II veterans on the show. We'll also, each week, tell you about a book that has something to do with that time in our history. We'll have a book of the week. We'll also tell you about a website of the week and a volunteer of the week who is working along these lines here in our valley. And for information on all of that, you can go to KMJ580.com and click on Hometown Heroes. Today, we get to visit with a gentleman who spent 32 years in combat in Los Angeles school districts as a middle school teacher. But before that, he was in Europe at the start of the Battle of the Bulge. We'll bring in now Augie Macaluso, who makes his home here in Fresno. Now, Augie, I know growing up in Pennsylvania, your father was a veteran. He was from Italy originally, but he had served in the First World War, correct?
Yes. He had been a member of the 5th Infantry Division and served in France and in Germany in World War I.
And I imagine that knowing what he had done when the U.S. ended up in a war again, perhaps that weighed on your mind as you thought about joining up?
Yes, it did. Plus, it was a thing to do at that particular time. When they passed the draft law for 18 and 19-year-olds in 1942, it was only going to be a matter of time before we that were 18, 19, 20 were going to go, and we were anxious to go. In fact, I had voluntary induction so that I could go along with some of the fellows that I went to school with.
But that plan didn't work out so well, did it?
No, it did not. We went from Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, to Fort Meade, Maryland, and there were probably 50 of us at that particular time. First few days, one or two would drift off to one of the camps other than the one that I eventually went to. I looked around the fourth day, and I was the only one there. And I eventually wound up at Camp Seibert, Alabama, in the Chemical Warfare Service.
And this is something that strikes me. Every World War II veteran that I talked to, and the dozens over the last few years that I've done stories with, each one seemed to have an idea of what he wanted to do in the service. In the end, that's never what happened, but also in the end, he was never complaining about the way it worked out. And I know you went to that chemical warfare training, as you said, for 4 months, and then you got thrown another curveball, right?
Yes, I did. The outfit that I was trained with went to North Africa, eventually Sicily and Italy, but I was pulled out and sent to Vanderbilt University to become an educated engineer for the Army in the ASTP program, Army Specialized Training Program.
And that lasted for a while, and the Army changed their mind again?
Yes, the Army decided that they needed infantrymen more than they needed engineers, and the next thing we knew, I was in Camp Atterbury, Indiana, learning to HUP 234 in the 106th Infantry Division.
Now, some people who know their World War II history know a little bit about the 106th. You end up in Europe. Here you are, 20 years old. Most of the guys in that division are about the same age as you. And less than 2 weeks after you arrive in Europe, you get what you thought at the time and everyone said was a pretty plum assignment, right? Tell us about that.
That's true. We relieved the 2nd Infantry Division, the 23rd Regiment, and they had moved all the way up to the Siegfried Line but then had to pull back because of the lack of supplies. But they had dug in pretty heavily, and they had good fortifications that we assumed. As they left, they said, "You lucky guys, you're in a quiet zone. You really have it made." Well, that didn't last very long.
December 16th.
Exactly 5:30 in the morning, December 16th, the German artillery opened up with a barrage that lasted for nearly an hour. If you would liken yourself to being in an aluminum or a metal shed and had somebody throwing gravel at you, that's what it sounded like when we were in this earthen bunker. There were our shells all around the area. Fortunately, there were no direct hits.
And the intelligence for the Americans, there had been a couple things that had been picked up that maybe could have indicated that that surprise attack was coming, a massive offensive with a 250,000 German troops or what would become the Battle of the Bulge. But at that time, no one put all those pieces to the puzzle together to let you guys know that this was coming. You had no idea, right?
Well, not really. We didn't know about the massiveness. We knew that something was happening because we could hear sounds at night. The Germans flew a plane much like a small one-wing plane, because the noise that it sent up and down the line drowned out the movement of the Germans behind their lines. And they were moving tanks and infantry driven by trucks and horse-drawn in some cases up to get ready to have the original attack. We knew something was going to happen, but we had no idea it was going to be as massive as it was.
And you did all right the first day, surprised as you were, but it wasn't long before you ran into something that you weren't exactly prepared for, at least that you had no chance to fight against. Tell me about that.
That's true. The outfit to the left of us was overrun, and we in turn were overrun by the Germans. And directly in front of us was a minefield, heavily mined. It had been mined by the Germans when they withdrew. It was mined by the 2nd Infantry Division when they were there. And we were there long enough to put some mines out. So you didn't dare go out into that territory unless you had a guide who knew exactly where the mines were. So when the Germans came in and captured us, they told us that we, by putting Schmeisser machine pistols to our head, that we had to move across that minefield. Well, we were reluctant. But when you're looking at a Schmeisser machine pistol, you decide that you'd better go.
And that's what some people affectionately have dubbed, or maybe disaffectionately have dubbed, a burp gun, because in what sounds like one short burp, it can get off, what, 1,400 rounds a minute or something like that?
1,400 rounds a minute, that's true. In order to go across, we had to go over a double-apron barbed wire fence that was shaped like the letter A, with strands of barbed wire on each side. You had to pick your way over. As a result, I was the last one in the group, and I was the last one with a German right next to me. There were artillery shells coming in at that time because we had asked for close fire. These were American artillery shells. And the German who was right next to me was as frightened as I was. He ran up a number of yards in front of me, and when he did that, I moved off to the left as fast as I could and made a headlong dive into a snowbank.
Knowing full well that when you try something like that, they're liable to turn one of those Schmeissers on you and let loose, right?
Yes, I felt that that could happen at any second.
But it didn't.
Fortunately, no. And it was almost twilight, almost dusk at that time. And when I went in, I just didn't move. I stayed in position for endless amount of time. After about 3 or 4 hours, I looked around to pull my head out of the helmet, because my helmet had frozen in the snow. I pulled my head back and tried to locate where I was, but I couldn't get any direction at all. Finally, German artillery illuminated some of the buildings in the little village that we had been protecting. And I knew now what direction to go.
And that was the village of Heckescheid, I believe, correct?
Yes, it was. I had to, my fists, which were underneath me, were now frozen solid. So the only way I could find my way out was to put my fists into the footprints that I had made as I dove into that area. As I did that, my right hand hit something metallic, and I realized it was probably a mine called a Bouncing Betty or a Bouncing Betsy.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me another half hour to move after that, because I was really frightened when I realized I only missed that by a number of inches.
Now, you knew which direction you were heading in, but did you know who had control of that area where you were headed?
I did not know at that particular time. The only thing I did know, that about 50 yards on each side of me, I could hear Germans talking. So I'm now in the German lines. And before I made this burst to go across there, the American artillery started a fire in that area. So I had gone through a German artillery fire a couple of days before, and now I am enduring an American artillery fire. And the bits of shrapnel were coming right over me, and you could hear them just twisting and turning and singing as they would land in the snow. It really frightened me.
I can imagine that. And I'm going to hold you off right there for a second, build some suspense for our listeners when we come back at after this commercial break. We'll get the rest of that story. And I also want to tell you the story that Augie is telling us today on KMJ. You can see the TV version tonight on CBS 47 at 6 o'clock. That should come on right about 6:30 or so, and you can see what a handsome young devil Augie was as a 20-year-old back in 1944. Hometown Heroes will continue. We'll get the dramatic conclusion to his story there in December of 1944. That's coming up next on News Talk 580 KMJ.
This is Hometown Heroes. Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty. On 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. I'm your host, Paul Leffler. When we left you hanging a little bit, although you know that Augie's here telling us the story, so you know that it didn't end up too badly for him. Augie Macaluso is our guest. We were talking about where he was during the Battle of the Bulge after he had escaped German captivity, was trying to make it back to what he thought was an American-held position, crawling through the snow with German voices to the left and to the right. Pick it up where we left off, Augie.
When I hit that double apron barbed wire fence, running up to it, I felt as though I was running on my knees because my legs were so frozen. I hit that double barbed wire fence and flipped over and then began to run, expecting any minute to have bullets hitting me in the back because the Germans weren't that far from me. Apparently, they were as surprised as I was to be out there. As I got closer to the position that we had held before I was captured, I heard somebody say, halt.
Uh-oh.
Halt is the same in German as it is in English, but this one had a little bit of a southern tinge to it, and I knew it had to be Captain Comer, my captain from Alabama. It was, and I was home safe, at least for a while.
Prayers answered, at least for now.
Yes.
And you reported to him what had happened?
I reported to him what had happened. I told him about the position of the Germans, where they were firing, when they were firing. I told him what happened to our squad, that all had been captured, including myself, but I was the only one who got away. That included my squad leader, and my assistant squad leader. The assistant squad leader was wounded at the particular time when we were captured from those artillery shells that came in. I learned later that he died in a prisoner of war camp. But my sergeant, Sergeant Roberts, is alive. He survived, and I'm still in contact with him these many years later.
I want to talk about Sergeant Roberts. The day that the attack started, December 16th, he had a little problem with his wristwatch?
Yes, his GI watch malfunctioned, and he said to me, Mac, he referred to me as Mac, would you mind letting me have your wristwatch? And I was reluctant to do it because this had been a Christmas gift, an early Christmas gift to me, given to me by parents before we left to come overseas. And I said, yes, I'll give it to you, but whatever you do, please return it. Well, he was taken prisoner, and he was in prison until late May of 1945.
And in a POW camp, if you have something like a watch, that's going to be hard to keep without trading it in for something or out having it confiscated, I imagine.
Yes, he could have sold or given it away, sold it, whatever. He could have bribed the Germans with it. He could have had food, whatever he needed, he could have had if he would give up that watch. But he did not.
He did not, but you didn't get it back. And years passed. And at this point, I want to bring in another guest to the program. A little bit of a surprise for you here, Augie, someone who knows the story that we're talking about. We have Stuart Stern with us from Seattle, Washington. Stuart is an Academy Award nominated screenwriter, won an Emmy Award for his work. But back in 1944, he was in Europe, too, with the 106th. And Stuart, I understand that in 1977, you arranged a meeting between Augie and Sergeant Roberts.
I guess I did. It's hard to remember back that far. I remember the bulge better than 1977. Hi, Augie.
Hi, Stuart. This is a surprise. A real surprise. So good to hear you.
And maybe not as big a surprise as what happened at that dinner in 1977. Augie, tell us what you experienced while you were waiting for dessert.
Well, we were waiting for dessert. Sergeant Roberts leaned over to me and he said, Augie, I have something I want to give to you that I promised I would return. And at that moment, he gave me the watch. 33 years later, I had my watch back.
And it still works?
It still works. It's kept in a safe deposit box at the bank, but one of our children will get it eventually, I'm sure.
And if you want to see what that watch looks like and the smile on Augie's face when he displays it, watch that story on CBS 47 tonight. Stuart, I want to ask you, as the witness to that reunion of Augie and his watch, which obviously there are a few more things more important to him than his watch, but a pretty special moment for him at that point. Do you recall his reaction, the expression on his face, what that moment was like to be sitting there with him?
Well, it was a mixed moment. He was thrilled to get the watch, but not entirely thrilled about where it had been, because Sergeant Roberts, when he was captured by the Germans, knew that he had his honor pledged on protecting that watch. And the big question was where would he be able to hide it? And he finally, literally, found a place on his anatomy where that watch would be safe and where nobody could possibly have found it. And I don't think I'll go into details, but that watch has been to places that most of us have never been. And still, when he handed it to Augie was just thrilled to death.
Well, Augie conveniently left those details out the first time he told me about that, so I'm glad that you were able to bring the full depth of that story and the efforts to which Sergeant Roberts went.
Well, I think anything, you know, the battle was so extreme that it took, you didn't care how extreme you had to be to protect the things that you cared about, because the smallest thing became, especially if it was lent to you by a friend, the most important thing in the world.
Well, and Stuart, I want to talk to you about some of your experiences briefly, too. I know that you were not captured that day with Augie and the other 11. You had been trying to save your feet from frostbite, those horrible winter conditions, one of the worst winters ever in Europe. But I understand that when you heard they were captured, it was such a big deal that you rushed out of the schoolhouse where you guys were holed up and you forgot something down there?
Yeah. I forgot my helmet. I actually heard them being captured because Godfrey was on the radio, you know, the hand voice-powered radio, and we heard the whole thing when he was saying that one of our fellows had been shot in that trench, which we could almost see down the hill through the trees ahead of us, even though it was night. And shortly after that capture, when that phone went dead, and it was the last we heard of Godfrey until after the war.
And when he refers to Godfrey, that's the same Sergeant Roberts that we've been discussing.
Yeah, and we were, then all hell broke loose outside of the schoolhouse where we were hiding in the company or the platoon headquarters down there in the bottom of the schoolhouse. And Sergeant Godrow said, "We're being attacked, everybody. Get up and, you know, grab something, and we're going to have to go into those woods and shoot whoever is there. And we went storming up the steps, and I just forgot my helmet, which I left in that cellar.
How long was it till you got another helmet?
Well, I'm not even sure that I did get another. I think I had no helmet, and I had my pants ripped off on a barbed wire fence. I don't think I ever recovered a helmet.
But you, after the war, and you were able to hold on to all your appendages despite the severe frostbite that you were facing. I know they wanted to amputate at one point, and you found a way to prevent them from doing that.
Yeah.
But you went into Hollywood and into the film business, had a very successful career, a legendary career as a screenwriter. And at one point, you went back to that same area where you had been when you were looking to make a movie back there. Is that correct?
Yep. Had Schnapp sitting, looking out over this peaceful pasture, which had been the enemy front in front of us, right between the Siegfried Line and our front lines, and just couldn't believe. But spring was coming, everything was gorgeous, and the teacher asked me, I told him that we had burst out of that cellar and it was the last time I'd ever seen it. And I said, I'd love to go in the school and see what it's like with children in it. So he took me back into the place and it was wonderful. The kids were singing, and then he took me down into the cellar. He said, maybe you want to see this again. And to go down those steps that I had last come up in 1944 just chilled me. And then he went into the corner, and he came back with a helmet full of nails. And he said, is this yours? And mine had been creased across the front of it. I don't know what had happened. It was dented. But it was my helmet. He said that he had a feeling that whoever left it there might someday come back. And he was waiting to give it back to me.
And I imagine that with all the friends that you have, who people would know and love from Hollywood and the unbelievable career you've had, I imagine that that moment was as special for you as anything else that you've experienced.
Oh, it was. It was like the completion of a circle. But that whole visit to Hekushide that day was a remarkable one, because I had shot a boy from my position who had hung on the wire in front of it for 3 days until we got out of there. And I couldn't get close, or there was, you know, it was just war. And when I went into the village, I had a smell of death was everywhere. But my friend couldn't smell it, the guy who came with me. And I went back to that position where that kid had been stretched on the wire, and I just stopped and said a prayer there. And I'm not a very devout person, but the minute I had said the prayer for him, the smell of death went away.
Wow. That is a powerful story. Thank you for sharing that with us. And Stuart, thank you very much for your service to our country and for giving our culture such great legacies as well through your work as a screenwriter.
Give Augie my love.
He's still here. I was going to say, is there anything else that that you think maybe he neglected to tell us that you want to embarrass him with while you're still together?
No,
I don't want to embarrass him anymore. I think I probably did enough.
Thank you, good buddy.
Okay.
Well,
I'll
Stuart.
See you soon, Augie.
Fine.
Somehow.
Good
bye
to hear
bye.
From you, Stuart. Bye-bye.
Thank you very
you.
Much.
Bye-bye.
That is Stuart Stern, the legendary Hollywood screenwriter, and more importantly, in the terms of this show, a man who proudly served our country and almost lost his feet, but talked the surgeons out of cutting them off, and found that helmet all those years later, and was a part of Augie getting back his keepsake, the watch, which we now know has been to places that we didn't even know had been before. Augie, before we hit another commercial here, I want to ask you, you came back from the war. You're only 21 years old. You'd been in the Army for more than 3 years. You'd been overseas in combat for a year and a half. You're 21 years old. You have your whole life in front of you. You experienced things that some 60-year-olds don't even see in their lifetimes. What was that like for you when you got back, perhaps sailing into New York Harbor and seeing the Statue of Liberty? Can you describe that emotion for us?
Oh, it was a fantastic emotion. It was just so thrilling. When we left, it was near dark, and we first went overseas, and we didn't get a good look at the lady with the lamp. But when we came back, she was standing out there bright and clear, and everybody went to the side of the ship that I was on and paid tribute to her.
And another part of this story that I haven't gotten to yet is about your medals. Apparently, you weren't too concerned about medals because for years and years you didn't have any. I want to finish that story, but we'll wait till after this commercial break to do that. You're listening to Hometown Heroes. More with Battle of the Bulge veteran Augie Macaluso up next on News Talk 580 KMJ.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler. It's been a fun first edition of this show. Augie Macaluso, a little bit surprised by hearing from his old war buddy, Stuart Stern, the Hollywood screenwriter. Stuart illuminated us to where the watch Augie was reunited with after 33 years had been. You'll see that watch on CBS 47 tonight if you watch the story that I'll be doing with Augie for our weekly series, Stories of Service. Augie, I do want to ask you about another surprise that you experienced. You have two daughters, and they knew that you were a hero, and you, like so many of your generation, very humble. You never asked for anything. You did your duty. You came home, and you went on with your life. But at some point, I guess your daughters decided that they'd like to see which medals you had earned during your time in the service?
That's true. I was reluctant to do that, as many GIs were, but finally, after a certain amount of pressure, I decided, all right, I'd go over to my congressman and find out if he could find what medals I have coming to me. And after a period of time, his office called me and said, we have your medals. If you'll come over, we'd like to present them to you. And when I got there, a general was there to help present them along with the congressman. And they said, here are the medals that you have. You have, believe it or not, the Good Conduct Medal. 3 years of being on the straight and narrow. You have American Theater for being in the Army in America, in the United States. The ETO Medal, and that was for being with two battle stars for being in the Rhineland and the Ardennes battles. And the Victory Medal. And they said, well, we have one more medal for you. And I couldn't imagine what that would be. And he said, you're entitled to the Bronze Star. And I was as stunned then as I was today when Stuart came on the radio.
And the reason you were entitled to that was because what you did on December 18th in escaping German captivity and bravely finding your way back to the lines and informing them where the positions were, which could have been valuable information for them at the time.
Yes, I'm sure that's exactly what it was about.
What does that mean to you? I know it's something you never asked for, you never imagined that you wanted to have, but what does it mean to you now when you see it on your wall?
I'm just so proud to have received all of the medals, but particularly that one.
Well, and we're proud of you, too. You are a hometown hero, and that's what this show is about. In every hometown here in the Valley, you will find heroes from World War II. They won't call themselves that, but I think we can, and we need to preserve their history before they're not around to tell us anymore. Augie's going to be around for a long, long time. You can tell just by looking at him. And I think those 32 years teaching middle schoolers in L.A. didn't give him any more gray hair than he would have had otherwise, apparently. Thank you, Augie, for being here today. And if you want to stick around when we take a few phone calls a little bit later, who knows, maybe there'll be another reunion in store.
I'll do that, and thank you for having me here today.
Well, thank you for your service to our country. I want to move on now to a few other things. I told you at the top of the show, and yes, I will be taking your phone calls in a few minutes at 490-5858 or toll-free 800-776-5858. Feel free to tell us what you'd like to hear out of this program. It's a work in progress. This is our very first show with Hometown Heroes, and I want to do something that is meaningful to you and helps preserve history and inspire the future generations of Americans here in the Valley. But the three things that will also do every week. I'll tell you about a book of the week that I think you'd enjoy if you have interest in this area. Also a website of the week that can be helpful. And then we'll talk briefly to a volunteer each week, someone who's doing something for veterans here in our Valley. As far as the book of the week, and you can find information on this at kmj580.com, it's a book called Ace. It's by Bruce Porter, a colonel in the U.S. Marine Corps who was a real pioneer in night fighting during the war in the Pacific. Has some fabulous stories, and it really shows you the ground floor of military aviation in the 1940s. Some things that maybe you didn't realize before with what some of the pilots went through and some of the price that was paid even before the pilots got overseas. So that book is called Ace, by Colonel Bruce Porter, who lives here in the Valley, a great man who, if you want to go to CBS47.tv, you can watch the story we did with him way back when, where all of our TV versions of Stories of Service are stockpiled. That's the book of the week, Ace, by Bruce Porter. As far as the website of the week, I'll keep it simple to start with, the Veterans History Project. If you go to KMJ580.com, you can read all about the Veterans History Project, which is a product of the Library of Congress. It's something that anyone can take part in, whether you're a professional in the television business, in the radio business, or you're just someone at home, you have a relative that you think his or her story should be preserved. Get a tape recorder, get a video camera, follow the instructions on that website, and that story can be preserved for posterity in the Library of Congress. So look for that Veterans History Project link at KMJ580.com. And as for our volunteer of the week this week, we'll bring him in now. You may have heard him once or twice on KMJ because he likes to call into Ray or on Dog Talk. You see him with his red sweater at Bulldog Games. And back in 1944, he wasn't too far from where Augie was. He, too, is a Battle of the Bulge survivor. Earl the Pearl Watson joins us now. Hi, Earl.
Hey, Paul. Thank you very much. I'm really enjoying your show, man, your first show, and I'm very honored to be on here talking with you, and my God, those gentlemen were talking about an area where I was at, 64 years ago? My God, it sure brought back memories to me.
And that's the reason I wanted to have you on today, Earl, because I mentioned you're our volunteer of the week. You volunteer your time to so many great causes around the valley, but I know that one that you're really proud of and very involved in is the local chapter of the Battle of the Bulge Survivors. And I thought with Augie here today, you might have another guy that you could get in your organization.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm the vice president of the Valley, of the organization for the Battle of the Bulge, and I work very hard with them, and they mean a lot to me because they are the biggest heroes in the world. And the deal is that I honored them at the Fresno State football game. I talked to Dr. Welty one day, and I said, I'd like to honor the number one soldiers in World War II. And he says, Earl, we'll do it. And we had a beautiful honor at the stadium with all the people there, almost 40,000 people at the game. And I had a friend of mine to sing God Bless America for 7 minutes. And when I was walking up the stairs going back to my seat, everybody was in tears. And every time I talk about it, I get tears, especially about that World War II. It was a horror story. I was just looking at my hands. I'm still having problems with my fingernails and everything, my hand.
You talk about God Bless America, and I think that's fitting because the line of that song that strikes me every time I hear it is, you know, America, America, God shed his grace on thee and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. And you hear guys like yourself, like Augie, like Stuart being reunited today, and you can get that sense of brotherhood. It's not necessarily about the watch or the helmet or any of that. It's about that bond that made it so important to preserve those things and to reunite them with the people that they belong to. And that's certainly a beautiful song. I want to ask you, if there are people listening, and the Battle of the Bulge was so massive, the veterans who experienced some or all of that battle were almost countless when they came back to America. I imagine there are lots of veterans around the valley who participated in that but aren't members of your organization. So if someone's listening and would like to join, what should that person do?
Well, they can call me. I can give you my phone number.
Let's hear it.
Yeah, the phone number is 298-0764, and I'd be very happy to invite them to our Christmas party that's coming up in December. Every 3 months, we have a meeting, and we were honored out there in Kerman with one of the number one farmers out there in Kerman, the Porto brothers.
Right.
And, boy, what a deal. And, you know, we only have about 22 left out of almost 200 in the valley. And so I changed the name to Survivors of Pearl Harbor. And our members told me afterwards, they said, Earl, you know, we don't get honored that often. And they were so appreciative. It meant so much to them, the last two honors that we have. And we're invited out there again next spring to have another luncheon and a tribute. And all those farmers came there and got together and treated us like we were the number one American citizens in the United States.
Well, as they should, and I'm so thankful that they did that. And Earl, I appreciate you coming on today, and I understand that folks are going to be able to read about you tomorrow. Is that right?
The magazine comes out tomorrow. I think it's the best veterans magazine in the United States. It's the United States Veteran Magazine, and there's going to be 50,000 copies.
It's produced here locally by Bill Dietzel, who does a fabulous job. You can always find copies down at the Veterans Memorial Museum downtown, and they're going to have a pretty big write-up on you this time, huh?
Yeah, it'll be about 5 pages in there, and it'll be about my experiences in Hollywood after the war and my experiences in the war, and I'll be on the front cover, and boy, that's going to be quite a thrill. He's going to send out about 30,000 of them to all the people in the military, the VA hospitals and everywhere, and even the soldiers over in the war will get copies of it. And he's going to send 10,000 copies to the Hollywood Museum. They had me to put 150 pictures of my life in Hollywood in the museum there.
Wow.
And so it'll be there, and then we're going to spread them around to the different churches here in town.
Well, I will certainly look forward to getting my hands on that magazine and reading some of that. Maybe we'll have you as a guest on this program sometime to talk more about your experiences in the war. But, Earl, thank you for your service to our country. Thank you for all the things that you do here in our valley. Give us that phone number one more time for any veterans who are at the Battle of the Bulge that would like to join your Battle of the Bulge Survivors group.
Yes, it's 298-0764. you know, we're up in the age now, in the 80s, so I have to say it real slow so that you can get it on the radio.
Well, everybody heard it that way. That's wonderful. Earl, thank you so much, and I'm sure we'll see you out at the Bulldog game soon. You have a great Sunday night.
Keep up the good work, and God bless you.
You too, Earl. Thanks a lot. That's Earl Watson, our Volunteer of the Week. If you want to check out a link to Veterans Magazine, which will be featuring Earl in that issue that comes out tomorrow, go to KMJ580.com. That's where you'll also find the links to Book of the Week and Website of the Week. We need to take another commercial break here. When we come back, we'll take a few of your phone calls, as long as we have time, up until the 5 o'clock hour. 490-5858, toll-free, 800-776-5858 on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Now, more Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, honoring the everyday Americans whose service and sacrifice have kept our country free then and now. We're going to primarily focus on World War II with this show, as I've done on TV with stories of service. And you've heard Augie Macaluso's story. You've talked with one of his old friends. And now we want to talk to you a little bit. 490-5858, 800-776-5858. We have a few minutes to take your phone calls. Chris has been waiting. Hi, Chris. You're on Hometown Heroes. How are you today?
I'm doing great. First, I wanted to thank Augie for his service.
Amen.
And as a member of the younger generation, most of our knowledge of the war comes from movies, and I was wondering if there was one or two that he has seen that's truly depicted what it was like over there.
Great question.
Yes, there is one that comes to mind, and they did an excellent job in that Saving Private Ryan. If you want to get close to combat without being there, that's as close as you're going to get. He did an excellent job on that particular one. In fact, I saw the movie, and there were some other veterans apparently in the theater with me, and when, during that particular show, one of them started to sob. So you had a pretty good idea that it was realistic. It bothered me when I heard the tank coming, mm-hmm. because the Germans, of course, used tanks against us and during the Bulge. And when before the tank ever made it around, I could hear the click, 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 of the bogey wheels and the track, and that bothered me a little bit. But if you want to see something that's pretty close to the real thing, Saving Private Ryan with Tom Hanks.
And I imagine,
right, well, thank you.
In addition to the tanks, anytime you hear a recording of an 88 or a Screaming Mimi, it takes you right back.
Screaming Mimi. Screaming Mimi, by the way, was a multiple-barreled mortar that screamed as it came, and no matter where it landed, it sounded like it was coming directly at you. And it was as close to a terror weapon as you could get.
And on top of movies, anyone that wants to see something on the screen, watch CBS 47 tonight at 6 o'clock, and you'll see Augie's story of service and a lot of the things that we've talked about today. You can see what he looked like then and see that watch that we spent so much time talking about. Chris, thank you for your phone call. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes today. We have another 5 minutes or so for your phone calls at 490-5858 or toll-free 800-776-5858. And when I talk about inspiring future generations and preserving the history of these World War II veterans, there's a fantastic program headquartered in Fresno, as far as the state of California is concerned. Stories of Service is a volunteer project. A lot of the people involved are high school students, and they learn video editing software. They're able to do all kinds of tricks with still pictures and moving video, and what they do is work with the veteran to write a narrative. The veteran then narrates that audio. The student then matches that up with some pictures of the veteran during his or her time of service, and what they end up with is a five-minute mini-documentary that goes to the Veterans History Project in the Library of Congress. So it's a great way to connect the greatest generation with what we can call the latest generation, I suppose. And if you're interested in getting some more information on that, maybe starting one of those projects in your hometown, go to KMJ580.com and click on the box to send me an email. We'll be back with you again next week. Each week we'll have at least one or two World War II veterans to talk with here. We'll always have a Book of the Week, a Website of the Week, and a Volunteer of the Week. And our next caller, as far as this afternoon's show, is Jones. Do I have that right? Is this Jones? Hello, Jones?
Yes.
How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Great. Thanks for listening.
Fine. Hey, I just turned your program a little while ago, and I've been listening to some of your stories from World War II. I'm not a veteran, but I was 8 years old when the Pearl Harbor's attacked.
Right, right.
But there's a series of books out made by Gerald Austin about World War II. People should read those. They want to know about it. And those are stories by people on the front.
Well, we'll look into that. That might be another book of the week somewhere down the line. Jones, thanks for calling us and letting us know about that.
It's been on the program for several years.
Sure. Yeah, I'm familiar with it. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening today. And we're going to try to get in as many callers as we can before the end of the program in a few minutes. So we have another Chris on the line. Hi, Chris.
Yes, good afternoon. Are you aware of the bases that FDR set up across the Pacific under Pan American prior to World War II? And the, I believe it was the Clipper Panama, which was fired upon at the same time that the bases in Pearl Harbor were attacked. This was Wake Island.
Right.
And the Clipper Panama was the very first returned to the United States with the story of Pearl Harbor. She had over 90 bullet holes in her.
That's one of the fabulous stories of World War II, absolutely. In fact, here in our valley, we have some Wake Island survivors who are still around here, and that's a pretty rare breed.
Correct. My dad flew for Pan American and pioneered the Far Eastern routes, and flew with Captain McCoy, who was the one who piloted that one particular aircraft on that day. He came out with shrapnel in his arm, which he carried with him for the rest of his life.
Wow.
Yeah, most people are not aware that FDR was aware that World War II was coming, and worked with Pan American to get the bases set up across the Pacific, and also across Africa prior to World War II.
Well, and that's what makes this subject, I think, just so amazing for people who really want to take the time to learn about it. And yeah, I've learned so much from the veterans that I've talked to, and I haven't even scratched the surface. But it's just such a universal thing. Every town in America, and like the Ken Burns series demonstrated, you can pick any town in America, and there are people. Everyone in America was affected by this. The people living now who weren't born yet were affected by what happened 60 years ago. And there's no end to the things that you can discover and learn if that's up your alley. So thanks for sharing that with us, Chris. And if you would like to tell me more about that, go to KMJ580.com. There's a form there you can fill out to send suggestions for the show and anything else that that you would like to talk about. Augie, before we sign off here today, I want to thank you again, not just for your service to our country, but for sharing your story with us. I know for a lot of veterans, it's a hard thing to do to talk about some of that, but it's a very important thing, and my generation and future generations will benefit from the fact that you've shared some of those things with us. Is there anything that you didn't tell us that you think people ought to know about what you and the guys like you did during World War II?
I can't think offhand of anything right at the moment, except perhaps the war affected more than just the GIs. There was a situation after the war was ended. I was pulling occupation in the Rhine Valley, and we were not allowed to fraternize with the Germans, weren't to be social with them at all. But the little kids would come along and ask for cow gummy or cigarette for Papa or chocolate. And I remember one particular occasion, two little kids came up to me, German, little blue-eyed blonde girl, about 3 years old, and I had some Walnuttos, little caramels, and I handed them both to her, the boy, and also to the little girl. And the little girl had trouble getting the wrappers open, and I couldn't figure out why. So I looked closely, and I saw that all of the fingers on her one hand had been blown off.
Mm.
And the older boy said to me, I looked at him quizzically, and he said, "The Krieg, the war." That really left an impression.
The toll on civilians was almost incalculable during World War II. Far more civilians killed than actually military participants.
It bothers me even to this day.
I believe that. Augie, thank you so much again for being here today. And for those of you at home, if you'd like to see Augie's story on CBS 47 tonight, that's our 6 o'clock newscast. It'll come on around 6:30. All the stories are available online as well. Go to KMJ580.com. Check out that book I told you about, and it tells you how you can even order it. Check out the website of the week, and you can maybe even read more about our volunteer of the week. That's going to do it for Hometown Heroes today. Thanks for listening. We'll be with you again next week.